Sound tolerant.
I just hit record, so whatever happens now is like on tape. Hey, Gavin, lovely to see you again after Beyond Tolerant in Düsseldorf 2 weeks ago, actually. I mean, 2 weeks ago it was over already again. Can you imagine? It's like,
I know,
everything was
so
quick,
fast, isn't it? Yeah, did. That was a whirlwind, wasn't it? Leading up to that, we were, although like we were speaking every day leading up to it, and we've been speaking every day afterwards anyway, and we speak really regularly anyway, which is lovely. So but it was nice. It was such a, as we were talking, I made my big old sort of blog live today. So it's been really nice recounting the story of what we did and what happened and all of that good stuff. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's pretty lovely. I mean, I myself start like roughly a year before to collect ideas for speakers and write for speakers and stuff. And then for me, it's a bit of like a steady going line until I'd say like 8 weeks before it goes like, and then everything is getting like, we're like, whoa. And then it's over again.
I don't know how you do it. You're so good at that you're very calm under pressure and things just, I mean, I know things were kind of not going quite right all the time, you know, just life and things going wrong, but you always seem to handle it very calmly and just like, okay, on to the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly have to say, I think that's what I learned like pretty early on when I started organizing holiday camps for children. That was when some things, they just have a self running. So once they run and you can't stop them. So the only thing you can do is like, take control in the matter of like how you steer them in a way, in a right direction. So if things go wrong, you still kind of fix it. It's just like accepting that this happens and making the best out of it. So that's the rule, right? So I remember one year, Toby, actually the DJ on stage, he said to me when something technically went wrong, he said like, how can you stay so calm? It must be in 2013, 2014 around this time. And I said to him like, well, A, I cannot change it right now because it's happening. I have an idea what is broken, but I cannot change it right now. So we have to go through it at least until lunch break. And also if I now freak out about it, the audience will recognize this and that wouldn't help either because there's 500 people in the audience and they want to be entertained. They want to be happy and they don't certainly want to see me like in a grumpy and like upset mode, right? So what can you do?
That's true. That's hard. That is a skill. That is a learnt skill though, isn't it? Like you definitely have to
absolutely
work at that. And funnily enough, I saw a really interesting thing the other day. Someone had posted about the actual definition of stress. Because obviously stress is a word that we all use and probably overuse all the time. I'm really stressed. That's really stressful. But I didn't actually realize the definition of stress is really something that is out of your control. But actually quite a lot of things that we say stressful, well, it is in your control and you can change it and you can alter it. It kind of really like has made me reframe that word and kind of like, oh, but in a nice way, in a positive way of, oh, if I can control it, then okay, how do I do it calmly? How do I let myself stay calm and sort of figure it out? And then when things are kind of out of your control and they're all, yeah, like that, that's fine. That's fine that you feel that, God feeling. But if you can control it or at least steer it, you know, do something different, then that's
exactly it. Try to make the best out of it. And that's why you've written that in your blog post. When I said like, if stuff fails, for example, your life stuff. Yeah, well, the plan B would have been, you on stage and surely you would have done something.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I remember you said that on when we were just sort of, doing the tech run through. And it hadn't occurred to me, but it was so sweet that, hopefully for you, it was like, well, if it goes wrong, I know Gav, I've known Gav a long time. He won't freak out on stage and he'll just do something. Something will happen. What
exactly
it is, we don't know, but something will happen.
Exactly.
I love that.
So, the idea of this little chat that we have here, this little conversation is a little bit what you did in your blog post. Explain people and me, for example, what you actually did there. Because it wasn't just the opening titles that people talk about. It has been the overall design. So I remember, I don't know actually when it was that you got to me and said like, well, I'd like to do like everything, the t-shirt, the badges, like the whole design. And I was like, oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, let's do it. So how did you start? I mean, how did he like, did he come with the up? Because I remember when we first time spoke about it, you said like, well, I've got plenty of characters in my drawer somewhere. So I thought you're going to do something with freaking characters and bloody very colorful characters, whatever. But you didn't. And you surprised me when you sent the first idea of what you did then in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so I guess for people listening, obviously we're just 2 weeks after Mark's Beyond Tellerrand in Dusseldorf, and I did the title design, which I played live on stage, but we'll come to that in a bit. But at the same time, I'd sort of helped design everything that went around the festival. And that's really because of when, you know, I spoke at your Berlin event back in 22, you know, I've obviously, like I say, I've known you a very long time. I know that you then have, you love designing all of those elements anyway. So that was a natural, like, oh God, well, if I could do the titles, I'd love to do everything. So that felt mm-hmm. like a natural, if that's possible, I would love to be useful and do it. But the design side of it, yeah, that's a really good point, actually. So I was looking at my notes earlier of early ideas, and there was all sorts of ideas. I planned on making it look like a cheesy 1990s Power Ranger film, where, you know, like everyone's wearing these ridiculous suits and doing these big moves, and the filmmaking's quite cheesy. I still would love to do something like that. But I think knowing now that, you know, I have a full-time job. I work at a studio in Bristol in the UK called Oddman. You know, that is a 37 and a half hours a week. You know, it's a full-time job. Yeah. I have two children. So I think now I'm good at being realistic in my time and knowing mm-hmm. that this would have to be in the evenings once the children are in bed or in the early mornings before the kids have woken up. I had to be achievable in what I could do.
Yeah.
And loads of ideas would have been really fun to make. But I think I knew that I could, like, good old graphic design. I think because my title is I'm a director and a designer, but I originally started doing graphic design. That's kind of how I came mm-hmm. into things. So I think I thought if I rely on a skill I know I can do, that's one element I don't have to worry about. And now mm-hmm. saying it out loud, I decided to override that comfortable element by saying, hey, can I play those titles live, even though I've never done that before in my life? So I think it was the origins to designing it in the way that I did, which is like very 2000s style mm-hmm. sort of graphic, very graphic heavy, very typography heavy, very visual overstimulation. Kind of came from a place of, A, I love that style. I know you both yeah. appreciate that aesthetic, but also, I think I can pull this off, because it's all well and good having a great idea. But if I fail at the execution and I stitch you up by not being able to finish it, then that's good for no one. Mm. So yeah, it's almost true. Like it came from a place of the things I love, but also economy as
what's
well,
realistic.
Which I don't think is a bad place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's very clever. I mean, some people might overdo, like, not overdo, but like, what's the English word? Like, they would not be realistic in terms of what time consumption that all takes, right? I mean, from the idea, I think as soon as you have an idea, as you're also right in the blog post, once you have got the kind of template set, the adaption of the rest is easier, right? But like, to get to the idea and be realistic, is that all achievable in the time I have got? That's it's very, very for me at least, always the worst point, because I'm bad with like planning my time already for a day, not to talk about like a project like this. You said something there as well, having family and a job. I mean, people already really, really wonder. I remember the talk. When was that? Must have been 6-7 years ago when you were talking about time in Amsterdam.
Oh yeah.
Like how you schedule your day in terms of like your clock that you build for yourself, where you have like, this is work, this is family, this is off time for projects and stuff like. So when do you sleep then? I mean, like, do you get away with like little sleep only per day, or is it for like you can do that for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then you need a break?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually, for the viewers. Yeah, I did a talk in Amsterdam, about 6 or 7 years ago. And in that talk at the time, I used a thing called the time circle, which really is a circle split into 24 segments. And I color in what I'm doing. And what is so useful at is when you then fill in, I don't know, say you do 8 hours work in your day, and then you do, 6 hours sleep. You know, you then start like get a visual, a very easy visual representation of where your day and time could be spent. I do that less so now, because I think I'm quite good at my routine, and I'm quite good currently. My children are 8 and 4, and our routine is quite set, you know, ish. But I do. I mean, I operate, I guess, not on loads of sleep. So when I was, you know, at the height of our project, I was probably coming in here in my space at like 9 p.m. and then working till sort of midnight. And that was quite good. I could get 3 hours and then sort of up, you know, if I don't get up early, then I'm up at about 6:45. So I'm kind of getting like 6 hours sleep. But
okay.
A, my daughter is waking up in the middle of the night. A lot, well, every night, actually. So it's broken sleep. And when it was really kind of like, I really wanted to make good progress about 2 weeks before the Beyond Teleran Dusseldorf happened, I was getting up at sort of 4:45 to do 5 to 7 a.m. before.
Oh, wow.
And I really liked doing it. I did do that. I used to do that when my kids were young, because I wasn't working in the evenings, because often when there were babies, my wife would be feeding them on the sofa. So it was our time to be together as a new family. It's a totally different dynamic, isn't it, when they're babies, they're really little. But now I do bedtime. I kind of get my hours back at night. So I don't often get up early. But because the, you know, those 2 weeks and what was so lovely, we were always talking on WhatsApp because you were in the thick of getting the event ready. You know, it was like that. Come on, right. Here's the big push. I've got to make 13 pieces of music and 13 moving graphics and all of that. So, but what was interesting there is quite quickly I realized I'm not as young as I was. I'm 43 this year. And that recovery time, I couldn't do every morning 5 to 7. I just couldn't. I think with the day job and family, I just couldn't sustain it. So I was kind of doing sort of every other day. I'm still doing the 9 p.m. onwards. And sometimes if my wife did bedtime, I could start early. So sometimes I could be in here and do sort of 7:38, which was great, you know, get a good 4 hours in here. But yeah, it was also quite nice still being like, well, I can't break myself because, again, we're going to be together at the event. Like you can't push so hard and then totally screw it and be useless and not be able to sort of perform on stage and give a talk. So yeah, I think as I've got older and done this longer, I'm just better at reading my own signals of when to push and when to just
push. Yeah, same for me, I have to say. Like, for me, it was easy, but like pre-pandemic, I would say, as a time point. That I would be able to like start at 11 and easily work through like 3 o'clock and then get up at 6 or 7 again to get the kids to school. Not a problem. But nowadays, no, not working anymore. I'm like not really good and do this anymore. So latest this year, latest was like 2 a.m., but maybe like I did 4 or 5 sessions when stuff was like printer deadlines and printing deadlines and stuff. So that to get the stuff out in the morning to the printers. But apart from that, I am much better prepared just for the sake of my health.
I think that's it. So when you were like finishing at 2 a.m., were you doing that every night, or would you do a late night and then like the next night you would go to bed a bit earlier and then sort of
No. It was like, I think it was like 3 or 4 nights in a row and then took it easier again. So I had everything done by Wednesday before the event, most likely.
Nice. Okay.
And then I had to, like, some small things, communication, people want to change names on their badges and all this kind of stuff. Because don't forget, I do everything on my own. There's no other support team. So I'm like, support via email for tickets, blah, 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 blah. So all this kind
of
stuff.
I honestly don't know how you do that. I really do not know how you can be across so many things. I mean, that is what makes your events great as well. And obviously I've said this many a time, but I'm in awe of that you can do that. I think that is also your personality. And what was so great is I read that interview that you did recently with a magazine where you kind of describe yourself as a host. And that makes total sense. That makes total sense actually why you're happy to, okay, yeah, sure, I'll change your name on your lanyard. You know, oh, I'll also reply to that email from a speaker. Oh, you know, actually it is in your nature of who you are as a human. So I think that's really interesting that you have built the event in the way that works for you as well.
True, totally true, yeah. Needed a bit of time to recognize that for myself, because people were asking, how do you do this and how do you do that? And I went like, I actually don't know. It's just happening. It's not planned.
Yeah.
But it's what I like. And hopefully I can do that for a while still, because I really enjoy connecting people and bringing them together and like having the opportunity to do what we did. Again, when I say a playground, that's actually part of the concept, the Beyond Tolerant idea. It's not just the talks. It's the whole concept of it. If I ask someone for a T-shirt design, I say, like, I don't have a lot of money, so that's what I can pay. And then people go like, what should I design? Give me the logo. I say, like, no logo. Just design something. And I trust people that. And oftentimes it really is, I think, except from one time, in all those years, it was like their first draft. And it's like, yeah, that looks great. Fantastic. And they were like, really? And I was like, yeah.
Oh, amazing. So well, that is, I think that speaks to when people are kind of doing things as passion projects as well. And often it's a different train of thought, isn't it? It's a more personal connection, and they know you and they know the event, and it just kind of naturally comes. I think that's why I sort of felt like, not only again for sort of economics of time with the titles, I felt like, no, my instinct is right, and that's okay. Let's move on. There's a lot to do, and that's quite freeing, I think, because also you can then come back. And so, you know, I did kind of come back to the main Beyond Tolerant sort of black and green and white design, and, you know, adding the white in there to make it slightly different came afterwards. But I'm always trying to not let myself get too hung up, you know, okay, move on to the next thing.
And
sort of momentum helps massively.
Absolutely. And that's the same for me. The kind of reason for why I go with my decision and my gut feeling for things like the designs for the T-shirt or the opening titles and anything, that's part of the reason is because I learned to understand that, okay, there will be 500 people in the room, and certainly not everybody is going to like that. So the taste is totally different, you know. But you know what? I don't care. It's still great, and people won't say like, oh, I hate it. It's just like, oh, well, it's not my cup of tea. I think that's the worst I've ever heard, like, at Beyond Tolerant. Because it's like, I think the voice and tone I said in the beginning and up front in my emails and all that kind of stuff, people understand this is something where we meet and we're all friendly and we're all nice. We want to hang out. We want to all have the best time in our lives. So please, right? And so therefore, they are very receptive and very welcoming. And I think that was something that you experienced with the opening titles, as well as your talk, as well as the other speakers did this, as far as I heard of them. So honestly, a big shout out to everybody coming to this event and being welcoming as they are, because they are the people. I can be as welcoming as I want to. If 500 people in the audience are like assholes, you know, it wouldn't work.
I think what was really interesting and a testament to the culture is, and I was fascinated by this actually, people after every break, after every lunchtime, would just naturally filter in and take their seats. You didn't have to really like drag people in. Like people were there to listen to speakers and to be a part of a community. And they did exactly that. It was lovely. It was really welcoming. And obviously when, you know, like I mentioned in my blog, you know, we've hung out at events all over the world. And then I've always known the way that you talk about Dusseldorf is because it's your home. Like it has a special sort of, you know, draw for you. And that was that I know as soon as on day one, I got it. I totally understood it. It was this sort of lovely, pervasive feeling. You know, it wasn't anything
Yeah.
anyone in particular said. It was just that
No, it
feeling
is.
of, oh, isn't this nice and mellow? It's not lovely and
Yeah,
lush.
funny enough, I was able to adapt this to the other cities. But you're right. Like my own feeling, surely this homecoming, this love is where I lived a long time, and now I live close by. Yeah, it's great. I mean, and people like you and all the other speakers, they add to it, and it's great really to see how it, every time it works out, kind of. And it's like
Yeah.
really lovely to see the how it all falls into place in a way. And I just thought like, oh, it worked out again. I don't know how, but well, it did. It's funny.
Yeah.
A little bit, I
I mean, that's
mean,
15 years of work, isn't it? That's it.
oh yeah, at least 15 years. Like 15 years I do Beyond Tolerant, but I did like, wait, 10 more years with the Flash event that I did. And
Of
so for me
course. Of
it's
course. Yeah.
25 years of running events. So
That'll do it.
I started by the age of eight.
You were just a very switched on 8-year-old.
Yes. Oh, let's get a bit into details of what you did. So, we said you did the design. Obviously, you can see a bit of this. I tried to like get some of the assets into the frame around us here, from your actually from your slide, from your graphics. But what
Thank
did you
you.
do? Yeah, you were slow. You were playing with typefaces, color. You sent me a mood board with like some graphics where you said like, this is the kind of aesthetics I want to work with. This is where the direction. So where did you start when you started with this?
Yeah, the aesthetics and the mood boards really were that 2000s era sort of graphic design, but also digital design. You know, I sort of my first job really was as a digital web designer. So I was really exposed to web 1.0. And so for me, the design styles of tooadvanced.com and
Oh,
Design Is
yeah.
Kinky and K10K and then studios like the Designers Republic or 123 Clan. So it was very much sort of vector heavy, type heavy, everything heavy design. In particular, sort of PlayStation 1 and the Wipeout graphics as well as skateboard brands like Alien Workshop and Habitat. It was a lot. I think it was a real explosion of vector art combined with bitmap art, really, and then a smattering of sort of hard pixels as well. And in particular, everything on the web in at that time was our 8-point pixel type, and it was basically illegible. You could not read
No.
anything, and that was the body copy. And then if you did have title typeface, it was Helvetica Black that was kerned so tight together you couldn't read that either. And I love it. I kind of it felt expressive, and it felt, I mean, kind of, I guess if we jump back, we were probably thinking, oh, everything looks the same. But now with a bit of distance, it had personality, and
It had character, yeah.
it had character. You had to work hard to read a website. I mean, there is a downside here, and actually with Leonie's talk at your event, like the accessibility was an absolute nightmare. It would
Absolutely,
not have
yeah.
been accessible. It would have all have been images in tables. There is not an accessible thing about that. But from a sort of a creative point of view, I was always drawn to that. So I knew that that was an aesthetic I wanted to tap into. And then knowing that really, you know, you've got your 12 speakers, I wanted them to have their own look. Definitely, it's all within the ballpark of that 2000s web 1.0 aesthetic. But then again, for economics, I figured, well, let's just give every speaker a nice, bold, bright base color, and I'll use black as the text and the type and the images and illustrations, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And so that made it hopefully punchy as a look. You know, I picked a color palette that had 12 equally bright colors in it, and then Beyond Telerand itself, you know, the sort of event needed a like a main master look. I kept calling it master in all my files, like a master aesthetic that was black and then sort of neon green. And that was really a bit of a nod to it was probably a bit early in the 2000s, but sort of like, you know, basic computers with sort of, you know, the BIOS screens and a little bit of Amiga Cracktros as well from the 90s, but sort of just a quite eye bleeding bright aesthetic. So yeah, so then
I remember that quite well.
Yeah, it was. I think that's it. Like, it's all sort of the 90s bleed into the 2000s, and but very sort of computer tech influence before sort of anti-aliasing, really. I think hard edges and pixels and polygons, there's just something about that. And again, that maybe speaks to our age and what we grew up with. But yeah, that was the general design aesthetic for everything as a whole.
Yeah, and the see the color palette, like the 12 colors remind me pretty much of what the Commodore C64 was like capable of, 16 colors in general. I think the 12 plus two grays, white and black, that's the 16 colors. And they look pretty similar to what you had there.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Yeah, just really bold, bright colours that would pop on stage. And then, you know, what's really nice about your event is like when you do the A1 posters for every speaker as well. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. It was a nice way to work. I've done title sequences before, but this was a really nice way that the sort of design application around the building and around the event kind of came first and really helped steer how everything would look, which was lovely. But it wasn't until actually knowing that people had come into the venue, they'd seen the posters for the speakers, they had seen the design aesthetic all around, and then actually when they sit down and watch the titles for the first time, it's not disconnected. So actually,
no,
if anything, it kind of empowers it. It's like, oh, it's coming to life, rather than a totally different thing. And then they're spending the first sort of 20 seconds being like, oh, well, what's this design? What's that got to do with anything? So that was a really lovely byproduct that I think we had buy-in from the attendees.
Exactly. That's wonderful. Yeah. And that's what I usually try. Usually it's the other way around. Like 2 days before the event, I get the opening titles, or if not, I at least ask for like the kind of theme for each of the speakers of the titles. And then out of that, I generate the posters, and usually they look like movie posters sometimes, right? So I call them movie posters. So I had like really like this, like Beyond Terran presents, blah, blah, blah. And then the image in between. So I typeset them. So that again, people have a connection without sometimes knowing, because they see the posters when coming in, they sit down, see the opening titles, and there is the connection. Sometimes maybe not even recognizable for them, you know, but they have seen the posters when coming in. So yeah, that's exactly the idea of it.
Yeah, I think that was really nice. It was really nice, the lanyards as well, the lanyards connecting with the design on screen and everything else like that. That again, that master sort of aesthetic across everything was really helpful.
You did stickers as well. You look at this.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Shout out to our friends at Sticker App. Yes.
I'm absolutely
friends with those lovely humans and asked if they'd be up for collabing with you and me, and they said yes, which was lush. And so who doesn't like stickers, especially a sticker pack that has 13 stickers inside it, like 12 speaker sort of icon monograms and then a special shiny. I like the fact you've kept yours in a sealed case. Where's mine? Yeah, I've got mine. I'm not opening it. I want a sealed set.
It's very good. Yeah. So you designed the whole logos, like all kind of, it's not a logo, it's a monogram more than a logo, right? Like where you have got the first letters of the first and last name, and you made some kind of gaming logo on it. Of it. You see all of them here, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a direct wipeout 2097 reference, that all of those different, I think it was the different ships or the different racing companies in that game had, thick, chunky, junky graphics. And again, that era was very much reminiscent of that, very Designers Republic. And I thought, I think that's it. I'm always looking for any passion project that is an excuse to play out some sort of graphical dream that I've had. And you know, I've always wanted to make logos like that. And so this was perfect. And a set of 12 is like, oh, that's a great amount to do. So, yeah, so ended up doing those kind of, did those before I'd really done the speaker designs, because I ended up using the little logos and in various formats, even sometimes the ones songs that I didn't use and finish, I would take some of the elements and incorporate those into the speaker's actual design slides.
Okay.
But yeah, then getting to use them on the tote bags that you had for every attendee, and then the sticker collaboration was, it was just like we were building this sort of asset sort of kit of
library or whatever. Yeah, that really lovely. And did you, so how can I imagine, like the logos, was it a hard task to do, or was it you like having loud music on your ears and go like, wow, and once you got the first one done, you go like, oh, that's the direction, and just flushing it more?
Yeah, I think I did. I think because I'm so comfortable in Adobe Illustrator, I've used it my whole career, and it's just very pleasing to just deal in curves, just get, especially because that era is like, oh, let's see if I can make that S flow into that C, and it was quite therapeutic, actually. So that didn't feel tough. It was just sort of like, okay, well, again, you know the parameters. I think as soon as you have some parameters to lock you in, it's easy to get that momentum. And I had parameters because I had their first name, their first initial, and their last initial. And that's it, you know, go with it. You know, I know I'm using single color, a big chunky stroke, and then kind of go from there, really. So yeah, that felt quite natural. At some evenings, I was kind of getting sort of four or five of them done in one go. It just was nice. Like, yeah, let's do this, to do that. So that in itself is good motivation, isn't it? When you do make good progress, oh, it feels good. It feels good to carry on.
Absolutely. I was part of the progress, and therefore it was like, so, and I've seen all the little details you did, right? Like the kind of like ASCII characters, like me on the inner part of the packaging, for example.
Yes.
See? And then
I didn't know if everyone would know that. So lovely Dave, you have in the audience, came over on the last day. I didn't tell you this. And I think I'd done all performances, and it was almost on the last slides, and it was the sort of the home slide where it's that ASCII graphic but upside down. And he came over, and obviously this is Dave with his big, lovely English accent. He's like, what is that? I've been looking at it all conference. Is it? It's like a monster of some kind. I can't work out what it is. And I was like, it's Mark. It's Mark upside down in ASCII. And he was like, oh yeah. So I really like that. I presumed it was dead obvious, but that's really cool that people didn't know. Like, and that's also part of that design style as well. Like, you're not really meant to understand what everything is.
Exactly. And that's what I really like in general. Again, I take this, I never speak about like the speaker posters. I never speak about certain other things I do. I love if people explore and experience that by themselves to find out, because then they reward themselves by finding out, right? And they go like, well, have you seen that? Look at this little detail on the badge. Well, you know, and they talk about this kind of stuff. And that's so cool to see. And that really was some stuff that really worked out, I have to say.
It's nice putting in those details. Like, there's another little tiny graphic that's like a silhouette, and it's you on a podium. And I ran that in Adobe Illustrator through Live Trace, because again, that was kind of an aesthetic. Everything was sort of Live Trace. This is when we were, how am I going to get an image into Flash? Well, you could take it into Adobe and do a Live Trace and export the frames and then bring those frames into a movie clip. You know, even the sort of process, I was trying to emulate the good old days of Flash and that kind of look as well. So just little details. If anything, it sort of was making me happy, and thought, well, let's just pop it in there. I'm sure I'm not alone in people trying to reminisce about that time.
Fantastic.
So it made it in.
Yeah. And so what actually was the hardest task for you? Was it more like the starting point where you went like, okay, this is what I want to do, and to get to the point where you had this kind of flow and you had the kind of template or the base set, and then from there on you started? Or was it really the audio visual kind of thing that you had to do for the titles? Was that kind of where you were like, well, that's the monster in my bag. I know I have to do the graphics and the visuals, but like, this is the monster waiting to be done. Or was it for you like,
I think that's right. I think the design side, I felt really comfortable. I think the hard part was really just time. You know, I really wanted to make sure I would do a good job. But I felt, again, because I think I was channeling an influence that I know and love. I was using a program I know and love. I guess then it was using Unity, which I don't use really. But I'd done a lot of, so to jump back a sec. So the titles, the title sequence was performed live, performed on this thing, a Teenage Engineering OPZ, a small sequencer and synthesizer. What's special about this is it sends MIDI signals, and those MIDI signals can be taken into the Unity game engine, and then I can use that game engine to say, oh, a kick drum has happened. I'm going to take that kick drum data. I'm going to look at this graphic, this neon pink graphic you've put in the engine, and I'm going to scale it up proportionally. And that scale up will be directly related to the value of that kick. And so if I've got a really loud, meaty kick drum that's sort of taking place over, like, you know, sort of a 30-second note and it's long, it will scale it up that long and then shrink back. So it's kind of like working on values rather than, oh, I'm hearing a sound. It's more sort of data-driven. So the whole sequence was OPZ music, unique piece of music for each speaker, triggering the different designs on screen, and each element, each sort of slide design, you know, the speaker's first name and surname and picture, and all that data was split up into layers, and then the different elements of song, kick, drum, snare, hi-hats, bass, all of those samples, all of those bits would do different things, sometimes like move them, scale them, turn them off, turn them on. So that was like the fundamental principle, basically small sequencer.
Yeah.
Turning, moving, styling, changing graphics on the fly as I would play and perform this thing in real time.
For anyone interested in watching them, I will definitely put the video below this video, so you can really just explore it and see it, because it's actually fantastic. It was greater on site live, but it is still great to watch back nowadays. And then something happened along the way that I really liked as well. I think you said, like, well, this machine could theoretically also DMX control light, right? And I was like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I know that the frame that we have got with the light bulbs, that this is controllable. I don't know how. And so I was speaking to the tech guy, Dominic, his name is, at the venue. And he's like, well, we could control a DMX, but the problem is we need a specific controller to actually get it, like, get the DMX signal into the light desk they had, the light mixer. We don't have that. That's X amount of money. And we need someone to actually program it, because I can't do it. So I said, like, that might be a little too pricey for what we want to do, like, with the lights. But he said, like, well, but I could, like, manually control them. And I was like, would you? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. So, and then we, not only did you perform live and had these colors that we just mentioned a while ago, the color palette, but he managed to get the light bulbs outside of the, it's like a little frame. You're going to see it in a photo. I linked to a photo, or like include a photo. It's a little frame with like some like spikes outside, and that was all colorized. And he even animated some of the lights, like when he was doing this kind of stuff.
I did not know he was animating it. So yeah, that was amazing that Dominic said he would do that. And so that, I think that really helped bring it together, because I didn't know that on stage at the time. I knew it would change, but it wasn't until I saw someone else's video of it. I was actually with Brendan Dawes, another speaker, and I saw that on, I think like Paula Zuccotti's slide, the lights were not only purple to match her purple design, they were pulsing. And I was looking at it, I said to Brendan, I was like, did this happen every time? And he was like, yeah, it looked great. I just didn't know. It was so cool. And what was really nice, the animation style changed per speaker as well. So sometimes it's pulsing, sometimes it flashes. And I think that really helped, like, sort of, well, it made it into a performance, didn't it? It really made it into a performance. And for me personally, that was just so thrilling. That was a really cool thing to have together. And I think it's another thing worth noting on that performance. So for the viewers, when on the first time I played it, and so we played it four times, and, you know, when you have titles, you'll play them in the morning and then after lunch both days, so four times. And So the very first time I played it, I played it safe, and what I did was manually there was a song for each speaker on each of these buttons, and I manually would sort of let four bars of music play, and then I would manually trigger the next speaker. That was just a way for me to sort of play it safe, check it works. Well, I knew it worked because we did our test run through, but just sort of from a performance point of view, just like just make it happen. But then that worked and it looked good and the audience seemed to enjoy it. I knew that there was another way to do things in that I could automatically, well, program the OPZ, this thing, to jump to the next speaker after four bars. And then that meant my hands were free to then go into performance mode. And what's so
The
special
freestyle.
about this? Yeah, it's freestyle. Basically, it gives you 16 buttons that the left half affects the drum tracks, and the right half affects like the synth and the bass and the chords and the lead, whatever. And you can basically stack them. You could, if you have you if you had all the digits, you could press every single button if you wanted to. But what it does is it will, like, on the drum side, it will like take a drum. Like a snare hit, and then quadruple it. So it will sort of give you a drum fill, or the bass drum. It will sort of like extend that note out, or sort of syncopate it, and sort of like say you've got a four to the floor, like kick, 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 and then you just press this button for a little bit. It's like kick, 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 and what's great then? So the all of the animations that are plugged into Unity, because they're value based, that sort of like extra performance bit not only re-triggers the kick drum, it makes it more intense. So suddenly that photograph of the speaker that grows because of the kick, because it's a more intense, all of a sudden it's kind of doing this. So every performance aesthetically was always the same, but it would still at least kind of play back a little bit different. And that was just, I really enjoyed that. By day
Yeah, and me
two,
too. I liked it. Yeah,
I was like,
I really
yeah,
liked
I'm
it.
feeling it, I'm vibing it, nothing's gonna go wrong, no
You
one hates it.
could see that on your body language, like there, because we recorded with like two cameras and then the slides, obviously. And you could see like the one that is like focusing on you, where you went like a DJ, went like, yeah, you let go. And obviously, you did starting to
I
enjoy
totally
yourself on
realized
stage.
that. I do realize that on the, like, because they're only quite small buttons, but I was doing that like DJ thing of like you press it and then you move your hand a little bit. And I totally understand why they do that now, because you kind of like want, you don't just want to like gently take it off in case you're still pressing the effect. So it was like a, so I was doing this and oh, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was silly. And I think because it was immediate, and then that falls into another point that we had this GoPro camera, that's why I built this rig, really to just hold, just to look good, but also it let me stick the, I knew which button had which speaker on. But then I've kind of then had this little bit here that is a GoPro mount, because I really wanted to make sure that the viewers knew that this was live. So bottom left on every slide had the live feed of this GoPro camera overlaying with a bunch of different effects, and all those effects were done using OBS filters, real-time shaders. Because again, I wanted to ram it home that, like, no, this is really happening live. These are my hands, like, moving this thing. And again, the more sort of animated I became with more each performance that I was more confident in, I was moving around more, and that was a nice lesson to learn as well. That John Davey, one of our old friends who used to run the brilliant Flash on the Beach and Reasons to Be Creative in Brighton in England, he was like, next performance, you can move around more, you can be more obvious. And it was like, oh, great! It's lovely that I had the chance to change that. That wouldn't happen traditionally. So that was a really nice thing that I could sort of change. And then on the final performance, I increased the tempo by 20 BPM as well. It got a little bit mental and chaotic, but I liked the fact that I could do that. I just can. I turn the dial and off we go.
Yeah, that was quite great. So, your favorite one of the four performances you did? What do you think?
I think it was performance three. I think it was the Tuesday morning. I think I had a really great day on the Monday. I knew the tech worked, had some lovely conversations with people. That night on the Monday, I'd practiced more and had a play, and I was just really excited to do it again. And I think as well, because sometimes, you know, again, I'm sort of planning what buttons to press, but not really. I'm not really forcing myself. It just, the combination seemed to happen quite well on that, and it seemed to match with sort of people enjoying it. Like I could hear the crowd, which was really nice. So yeah, I think day two, performance one, just see, everything was great. I loved them all. I really did.
Yeah, but that's the one on YouTube, right? The performance three.
Yeah,
more or less.
Yeah, that's.
I got a link to that, so I'm gonna include this video then in that blog post where this also goes up here. So yeah, nice.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. Like even on Instagram, I kind of posted like, here's the first performance, and was explaining to Instagram like what we did, how it all worked. And then it was really nice a few days, you know, I shared, you know, behind the scenes of the hardware, behind the scenes of the design. And then, you know, then a few days later go, oh, but there was multiple variations of this performance. I think as well, I'm genuinely really inspired by like what fellow speaker Brendan Dawes does. Obviously he built the incredible Eno system for the amazing documentary Eno. And I think I'm really intrigued and interested in randomization and generative creation, not generative AI, not that stuff, but as in you build the parameters yourself and see where it
you
goes.
Build your system, right?
Responsive. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, that's cool. Well, I mean, and I really do like what I said before, that you not only do all this, but you don't keep it as a secret. You explain what you did there, and you and also the long blog post you did today, that does really transport the passion and the fun you had along the way. You know, it's not just technical. It's just like, oh, then I did this, and then triggered by that, this happened, blah 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 blah. And then I really liked reading it, and it's great that you do this, because that picks up people. You know, like this is where you take them into the boat and say like, well, listen, anyone can do it. I didn't know about this. I didn't know about that very much. I'm not a good musician, but still, I was able to get 13 beats off the ground and made them into this like little device, and I played live on stage and not being a proper musician, right? So what else can happen?
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. I think because I've become, I really enjoy giving talks. It's such a great privilege, and I've really enjoyed over the years sort of trying to bring in visuals and audio, and but it all supports kind of, I guess, the sort of core thesis of my talks, which is I have a day job that I love, and I love being incredibly professional and doing things properly, but then I really enjoy just the experimentation and not needing to be good at something to enjoy it and to try it. And then so by me playing music on stage halfway through a talk, it's a perfect example of I'm not a professional, I don't technically know what I'm doing, but I really enjoy it. It's furthered me on, it's made me feel a little bit more confident, and actually it's not the end of the world. The audience don't really care, and it's absolutely fine, and nothing's gone wrong, so keep doing it. So actually, yeah, and that's why I like writing the behind the scenes posts, really. I love sharing behind the scenes, because I love reading other people's behind the scenes, and I think just a bit of not imposter syndrome, but you know, I'm not a professional musician, a profession.
And you actually inspired someone to then right after the event go and design posters, right? Seen that, Sascha Frommers.
Oh, so right, yeah, I remember seeing that. That was like the next day, wasn't it? That's so nice,
right? And that's what I mean.
Through
being open about it and through like transporting what you did there, people are encouraged to like start stuff. And that's great. That's fantastic, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's the spirit of what you've done with Beyond Telerand, isn't it? People share their stories, share their work, share their ideas, and hopefully that ferments and lets people make their own interesting stuff.
And that's a great word to end this. Yeah, and honestly, it's a great invitation. And I honestly... Yeah, I said that so many times, but thank you so much for what you did. I think that played a big, big part of what Beyond Telerand and This Love was this year. I think it was like adding to the overall theme that I never planned, but it came through like a lot of talks. This kind of like put stuff out there just start doing. Nobody will judge you, right? So you just put out, and you if you like it, someone else will like it as well. And what exactly. what Sharon also said is like, don't be perfect, be present, right?
Yeah, that was great. That was such a nice, talk. Yeah, and a perfect ender as well. Yeah, don't be perfect, yeah. be present. Yeah, that's really nice. But thank you to you, mate, for the trust, for the encouragement, for the positivity, for allowing me to try something that I hadn't done, you know, publicly before. You know, just noodling in my own time is one thing.
Yeah.
God bless you for letting me try it on stage, and thank you for the kind people of Dusseldorf for allowing it to happen.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Honestly, great stuff. And I hope we can repeat this, maybe not in that scale for you and other work, but
no, let's do it. Let's go bigger. Let's go bigger.
Yeah, if you want to. Well, I'm up for it. Okay, mate.
It's on the internet. Cheers.
Thank you so much for everything. And thanks for the little conversation and for wrapping up all this. Like, fantastic to chat to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. All the people, 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 all the people,